This morning is the final morning for the meditation instructions. I would like to go over the instructions with you to give some basic reminders of the flow and the thread of the instructions. So, on the first morning, the focus and the priority was given to mindfulness of breathing. And we use the power of our attention, of mindfulness, to direct it to the breath, to stay in touch and as much as possible with the breathing as a way to center and anchor ourselves. In being in touch with the breath, and experiencing the fullness of the inhalation and the exhalation, part of the purpose behind that was to have a steady, moment-to-moment connection with each breath as it comes and goes. Sometimes we've noticed with the mindfulness of breathing that the attention, our attention, more easily wanders on the outgoing breath. So it can be helpful and useful to give a little extra care and attention to the exhalation, to stay steady with that. We mentioned as well the importance of the posture. Cross-legged posture, the kneeling posture, the sitting in the chair with the 2 feet firmly on the ground, and in all cases, the back straight. This helps for the energy to flow a little bit more easily and freely. When the back is straight, there is less pressure and tension on the heart, liver, kidneys, and the very posture itself contributes to the mindfulness of the breathing. With the mindfulness of breathing as well, there are the moments before the next in-breath comes in. Sometimes, with the mindfulness of breathing, there's when the last breath has just gone out, we may have to wait, just be steady and calm, be careful, be mindful that the mind doesn't wander, and then the next in-breath comes in. So there can be moments between the ending of the out-breath and the next in-breath coming in. Again, we can easily drift, get into story, fantasy, daydream. So part of our practice is the full care and attention to the in-breath, to the out-breath, extra care with the out-breath, and being mindful of those moments before the next in-breath comes in. Of course, mind will wander, stories will arise, thoughts will arise, memories or plans may arise, but quietly and firmly we bring the attention back to the breathing, so that there's a real sense, as much as possible, of being present. It can be useful when coming to the end of a sitting meditation, or walking or standing meditation, just to turn the attention back over the period of time of the sitting, standing or walking, and just notice and be clear in oneself, what was the quality of that meditation? How was I in the beginning period of the meditation? How was I during the middle period or at the end of it? And our life is full of, obviously, of beginnings, middles and ends in all sorts of situations. So how we relate to a meditation in its beginning, middle and end may be telling us a lot how we relate to many other situations in life. So in a way, sometimes the story of our sitting meditation is the story of our life. Sometimes we look and we say, yes, I get started, but then I lose my way part of the way through. I get towards the last period of my meditation and I'm getting restless or bored or agitated or waiting for things to be over or wanting something to be finished in some way. Can the beginning, middle and end of our sitting be telling us about other areas? Sometimes we're very slow to start. We find it hard to get going. 10-15 minutes into the meditation, we finally get established. Could that be telling us about other areas of our life? That we want to start something, but we hesitate, we can't find the right position, we can't get it right, and therefore we're very getting things going is telling us something about ourselves in the meditation as in daily life. So lots of habits and patterns can be looked at, can be observed. We can come to a lot of insight about ourselves just through mindfulness of breathing in and breathing out and seeing what's happening. There are times as well, as was mentioned, where the contact with the breath is vitally important. Periods of time when you and I are under pressure, when there is anxiety, when there is worry about past or future, when somebody is angry with us, when there is some danger, to return to the breath, to mindfully breathe in and mindfully breathe out. We're given some painful information. We know if we start thinking about it, we'll just get into fear, worry, agitation, confusion. So we develop and practice a meditation, a mindfulness of breathing, in order to reduce the stress, to reduce the tension, in order to stay calm and steady in difficult situations. And this makes mindfulness of breathing, as the Buddha said, of all the meditation practices that there are, and there are many, he said, I do not know of any so valuable for the health, welfare and benefit of human beings as mindfulness of breathing. It's an extraordinary practice to keep us calm and steady, and at deeper levels of consciousness, it also can take us to deep inner absorptions, extraordinary levels and depths of joy and contentment and happiness, and contribute to real enlivening, waking up of the cells. All that is the potential and the possibility with mindfulness of breathing practice. And so we begin to recognize and to appreciate that with such a practice, that it's just the regularity of engaging in it, the regularity, and it reminds us that the air element also gives us a connection with the world around. We all share air. It's one of the elements that gives support. It reminds us that life is environmental, inner and outer working together. We expanded with our meditations as well. And that expansion from the mindfulness of breathing was at times giving necessary and appropriate attention to mindfulness of the body. And our relationship with the body, of course, matters to us in a whole variety of ways. And some three of the considerations to body, one I just mentioned, is the posture. Second area is diet. And the area two of the relationship to the body. And with the relationship to the body, as I mentioned in one of the talks, there's the outer, the appearance. But what about the body in its sensations, in its vibrations, and the working with the pain? And so sometimes the various experiences have arisen. And part of the practice here is truly expanding our pain horizons. Sometimes we live in a very small box of how much pain we can deal with. Here, for the most part, but not for everybody, there is the opportunity to change the posture, and one knows that in the changing of the posture, the pain itself will just disappear. But that's not the case for everybody in the hall. Pain is a daily life experience in any posture, and then that's a huge challenge for the person to be able to accommodate and to include such forms of physical pain. But for most of us here, we know, we change the posture, the pain will go. Part of the practice of working with the body is to have the capacity, with relaxed power of attention, to move the attention into the painful areas and to really look at it, to look the tiger in the face. And sometimes, in that exploration, in that giving of attention, maybe the tiger hasn't got any teeth. Sometimes, the fear of pain, the resistance to it, the fighting and the fleeing from it is more a problem than the actual physical event itself. The relationship to it can be more of a problem than the event. And we're saying, let's look at the event. Let's look at this phenomena that human beings can spend so much time fighting and struggling with, and to see if we can just explore that pain that's in the knees. Above the pain, inside the pain, the outer edges, the center. See if we can, in a relaxed way, without tension, move the attention into that area and just feel this phenomena. It might be in the knees, it might be in the back, it might be in the arms, it might be in the head or wherever. And just explore that and see whether that pain, that sense of contraction, that sense of tightness, can be loosened up, can be opened up. That may mean that when all the defences have gone away, initially the level of the pain may seem to increase. It may seem there's even more pain, but it's in fact the resistances to it have dropped away. So there is more vulnerability, there is more direct exposure to the painful sensation. But then consciousness, or attention, and pain and the body, the two are just there together. And sometimes we can explore and look into that, and sometimes it just dissolves. And we can be left wondering, was the pain I experienced in the body, or in my mind, and I believed it was in the body, or in both? And sometimes it's not so easy to know, in the exploration of pain, just where it is. To give a more dramatic example of what I mean, I had a young man in his 20s who had lost, in a railway accident, both legs. Would come into the hall in the wheelchair, get off the wheelchair, sit on the floor. Both legs had been amputated from above the knees. He said to me he'd be sitting in meditation and he'd be feeling pain in his knees, pain in his ankle. And he'd have to look because he thought there's pain and there wasn't. He said it was just the power of the image and the power of memory was so strong, he was feeling pain where there were no legs. Sometimes we don't know what the mind, in our resistance, in our fear, and in our reaction, how much of the mind is going into the physical and intensifying the physical, helping to increase the level of the pain because of the mind's relationship to it. And we think it's only the pain. Sometimes you come to the end of the sitting and you're waiting, which is pressure, for the sitting to finish. The bell rings and you've been waiting there for it over, there's tremendous amount of pain going on in the body, you hear the bell and suddenly the pain starts disappearing out of the body and you haven't moved. There's no power in the bell, I promise you. It's just that one's just entered into a relaxation in that moment. The stress of the waiting has dropped And when the stress of the waiting dropped, so did the pain in the body. Never underestimate the power of the mind on the body. Sometimes in our sitting meditation and working with the body, it wasn't so much giving care and attention to particular painful areas or parts of the body, but there's the sitting with the whole being, the whole body. The care to the posture, total presence, aware of the form of the body, experiencing the sitting posture or the standing or the walking posture, and being utterly still. And as the tradition, the Buddhist tradition, has reminded us on many occasions over the past 2,500 years, sometimes when we move, we disturb the world of 10,000 things. And so there can be periods of time in the sitting meditation where to be absolutely still, impeccably, perfectly, not a whisper of a single movement from any part of the body, either unconsciously nor intentionally, and to sit with full posture, total presence to the body, completely still, is not to disturb the world of 10,000 things. It's almost as if we're not here. It's almost as if we're totally transparent. And those moments, and they just may be just for a few moments, are extraordinarily precious moments of being such an utterly silent and completely still human being, and to be in that stillness. Even a single thought in such times seems unnecessary, extra, unimportant, because of the quality of the silence and the stillness. And sometimes in the hall, when collectively we touch those silences and stillnesses, you can feel it. It's palpable. You can touch the silence. The consciousness can touch the silence. There are times when in the physical posture and in the fullness of attention to the whole posture, there can be, in the moment, in the experience of, a real appreciation, this physical activity, called the body, named the body, is not me, not myself, not who I am. You see, time-honored words of the Buddha here. The physical body is not me, not myself, not who I really am. And it is not that there's any withdrawal from the body. If it's understood, as has been mentioned over the days, there's less filter, there's less separateness, and there's an intimacy and appreciation of organic life manifesting. It only takes a little reflection to remember that you and I didn't ask to be born human, didn't ask to be born in chose to be in a certain place, didn't ask to be male or female. Just in the nature, this has emerged. And when we let go of this is I, me and my, and learn to connect and see it for what it is, this helps to develop and cultivate a wise and understanding relationship with the physical life, appreciating it for itself, appreciating it for what it is, being supportive, giving love to, giving care to, giving nourishment to, being respectful to, but knowing it belongs to nature and it comes from nature and it's not a possession. It's not something I own, not something I have. And the changing of this relationship means an extraordinary change with life. At times, we further develop the meditation. We've looked directly at the inner life. So that there's been meditations on the breathing, meditations on the body, meditations on the inner life. And at times, those meditations have been through awareness and mindfulness of the states of mind which have arisen. Sometimes those states of mind have been difficult, the troubles of the mind, the disturbances. Sometimes preoccupied, going in usually one or two directions, upon oneself or towards another or others. So in the problematic mind state, generally speaking, going in one of two directions, towards others or another, towards oneself. And we've said, here's the difficult mind states which have arisen. Sometimes it's in the field of thinking, too much thinking, too much knowledge, too much information, too much in our head. That may bring out of us, and it's not an easy thing to question oneself with, in my daily life, am I spending so much time in the mental sphere that I'm actually, it's at great cost elsewhere? And if we're filling our brain cells up with a lot of knowledge and information, and books, and computers, and internet, and newspapers, and magazines, and journals, etc., we may be overfeeding the mind that we end up with an obese mind and undernourished heart. And some people have looked at this in their meditations, looked at this on their retreats, looked at this in themselves and said, I have to change. Something has to change. So sometimes in the very meditations themselves, it makes us look at, do I want to live a fulfilled, integrated life, or do I want to be basically cut off from the neck down? Because I spend too much time upstairs in the attic. And we have some questions to ask ourselves about too much time in thinking and information and knowledge, etc. Sometimes we've looked at the states of mind, and what we've noticed with our states of mind, how much we are preoccupied with the story. Living in the story, which is a small world to be living in, painfully small world. And we imagine the story that's going on is the reality. It's not. The reality is not in the story, it's outside, it's elsewhere. But we've made so many stories up about ourselves and about others. For any story to keep going, it requires feelings. No story can keep going without it being fed by the emotional life. And it seems a pity that sometimes we are putting so much into that we actually get cut off from really feeling life, because it's all going into one rather enclosed area. So we're sitting, we're walking, we're standing. pictures, images, memories, plans, ideas, thoughts about, feelings about start arising. We want to look deeper. We want to feel more deeply. We want to see what's the spring for it. So then we turn our attention deep inside the body, exploring, putting our attention into the bare feeling itself. We may be sacrificing, and would be, some of the pleasure or some of the painful story that's going on for us, but it may give us the chance and the opportunity to go deeper into ourselves and connect with something deeper, something rather beautiful and rather profound, which our story and fantasy is hiding us from. Similarly, sometimes we have these choices and we keep thinking, shall I do this or shall I do that? Shall I say this or shall I say that? Back and forward. Let me tell you, the more choices you have, the more superficial your life. The deeper you go, the fewer the choices, and the more truth can move you. And there's no choice with truth. We live in a world of such superficiality, obsessing with choices, back and forwards and backward and forwards. We don't realize that the mind is just moving up and down, moving up and down, and we're calling it choices. The deeper we go, with the power of attention, clearer meditation, being willing to let go of the story, to get underneath it, so to speak, to touch a deeper place, there's an opportunity for things to come so clear, there's no choice then. We see clearly and we respond directly. And there's no choice in it, because the power of truth is moving us. And we don't want to live in a false way. We don't want to live going backwards and forwards between one thing and another. It's an indecisive, wavering, confused, and sometimes tormented existence, because the mind is moving backwards and forwards too much in the field of choices. It's superficial. So we give care and attention to the breathing, we give care and attention to the body, we look at the states of mind that appear. And sometimes in the meditations, it isn't working with the difficult state of mind. There isn't the preoccupation, the pictures, the ideas, the thoughts that are arising there. And then sometimes the quality of the inner experience is much more one of inner peace, equanimity. That means being steady in the moment. And we can feel a steadiness in the being. Thought, of course, may come and go. An idea may come and go. A memory may come and go. But it doesn't seem to affect the steadiness. And there's something very beautiful about steadiness. Because in the inner life, the steadiness of the being is close to truth, because truth is steady. And when you and I, in our sitting and walking and standing meditation, and we feel a real sense of steadiness, we're actually close to something which is unshakably steady, which is not affected by change, not affected by birth and death, coming and going, and all the events. And that is where our interest needs to be. Sometimes our thoughts and our ideas are too much preoccupied with time, too much preoccupied with me and my future, or with survival, personal survival or whatever. It's been said in here, say it again. There are more important things in life than survival. But we have to find what that is through our experience, through our own understanding, through going deep. We don't need religion, science and philosophers to tell us. We have to see through our experience. And it's the experience which really, really matters here. So in the meditations, mindfulness of breathing meditation, meditation on the body, to see the body clearly and well and respectfully, to look into the inner life, the states of mind, the feelings and emotions, notice and be clear where those feelings and emotions are coming from, and learning to rest in that place. Sometimes when we rest in that place, the very feeling which was difficult, the emotion which was difficult, actually becomes the instrument to take us to a deeper place. Feelings matter. As the Buddha said, life comes together in feelings. And there's something quite extraordinary when in the moment, for the day, we really feel alive. One person said, sometimes I feel I have more feelings arising in me when I start thinking about the future and all the possibilities of the future. And the thought that rose in my mind, and hopefully for others of us as well, what on earth can there be in the future that there isn't already here and now? Isn't the future going to be sights, sounds, smells, tastes, touch, sitting, walking, standing, living, breathing, eating, sleeping? How is it that the false, the image, the picture, the fantasy, the idea, has become for some the only way to get the feelings alive? By going into the future or getting worked up about the past. Every day, this day, today, whatever the day is in our life, with the interest and with the passion and with the connection, reveals an extraordinary amount, much more than what the eyes and ears tell us. We've also had the loving-kindness meditation. Very strong practice, a very strong tradition called metta meditation. And this is to cultivate and to help open up the heart. All too often, our kindness and our love has boundaries. Therefore, it's limited. The boundary may be to certain people. The boundary may be to people who are nice to us, who are kind to us. And then we start setting limits in the being, in the thought, on where the kindness and deep friendship can go to, according to how we're treated. But also, it's to ourselves as well. We sometimes show more kindness to other people than we show to ourselves. More warmth to others than we are to ourselves. So the practice of mindfulness, of kindness, of friendship, is to see, to cultivate it so that it breaks the walls, that it has a power to it. Then in the power to it, it truly can go in all the directions. It's an extraordinary thing to look at a situation which you feel angry about or negative about towards yourself or towards others, and bring out of your being love. And put that love into that perception to change the way of looking. My goodness me, in this world, if you and I are going to have choices in life, if we're going to talk about choices, surely that should be at the top of the list. To make the choice to change from blame, anger, negativity, fault-finding, being judgmental towards others and oneself, and changing that and bringing love into that perception and dissolving the old one. We can have talk about choice, fine. Let's make that the first choice. That's got power to it. It's got incredible power to it. And that expression of that also has, and this is why it's so emphasized in the teachings of loving kindness, of deep friendship, of metta, one of the reasons why it's emphasized so much is that in the opening of the heart, and once again expanding the horizons of the heart into all of the directions, it is close to truth and reality. Because reality is immeasurable. Because truth is immeasurable. And a man and a woman whose heart can open out and it's truly immeasurable. There's no wish to blame, to hate, to find fault, to be unforgiving, to put down. The heart can't do it any longer. It can't live that way any longer. And in that expansion of kindness and love and friendship in all the directions, one begins to get the real sense, as the Buddha pointed out, this kindness is as immeasurable as the reality, is as profound as the truth which knows no barrier and no limitation. So when you and I are looking deeply into ourselves and touching a place of steadiness, touching a place of deep, profound connection and love with life, we're actually knocking on the open door of what profound, immeasurable truth is, what authentic reality is. And this is why men and women who live deep in the heart and who live with that expansiveness truly feel fulfilled every day of their life. They know their fulfillment. They experience it. And the beauty of the Dharma and the teachings and the practices and all those meditations that you and I have been engaged in here help to make something happen. That's why the tradition has kept them 2,500 years. Mindfulness of breathing, care and attention to the body, love of silence and stillness, looking into the states of mind, getting deeper than just the story, touching the deep place of feeling, opening the heart out. If we cultivate and develop each one of these, nothing can stop this fulfillment. Nothing can stop truth from touching us. Nothing can stop the taste of that which is immeasurable. Nothing can stop it. So let's have a little meditation together.